Well, my name is Anthony. Again, for those of you who don't know me, I am the care pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and we're just so excited to have you with us. We're so excited to have you joining us online, literally from all over the world, and those of you who are here at 301 Garden today, as we kick off a brand new series that we are calling Unstuck, and we're exploring the truths around being stuck, right? We can find ourselves in situations stuck all the time, right? Stuck at work, stuck in a relationship, stuck in your past, stuck when it comes to your future. I personally don't like being stuck. I don't know many people who do. When I think of stuck, right, a few things come to mind. First thing that comes to mind really is being physically stuck places, right? And for me, the worst place to be stuck is to be stuck in traffic. I become another person when I'm stuck in traffic. People are like, Anthony, I can't really picture you being mad. It doesn't happen often, but when it does, I'm in traffic. Traffic is a nightmare when you're in it. But you know, when you're not in it and you see it, it's almost entertaining, isn't it? Like when you're driving and it's going on forever and you can turn and see you in the car and you're like, look at that, that's terrible. And then you get to the end of traffic and you kind of start seeing people joining the back and you're like, they have no idea what they're about to get into. But when you're stuck in traffic, it's absolutely terrible. A few weeks ago, we were at a staff planning retreat in Pennsylvania, little nowhere Pennsylvania, and I had to get to my appointment. I had about, you know, it was like 40, 45 minutes away, and I decided to leave like, you know, maybe 50, 55 minutes before, you know, group. Maybe I'll give myself some time to grab a cup of coffee and all that stuff. I was literally driving about a mile, and then I'm in the back roads. Like, there's no reason there should be traffic, and I just turned the corner, and I am stuck. Like, we are stopped, and I'm like, why aren't we moving? Why are we not moving? And it's 7 a.m. There shouldn't be anything. I become like George Costanza. I was like, what's happening here? And you know what it was? It was farm traffic. And those of you in this neck of the woods may not know what farm traffic is, but we don't deal with that too much here, but I'm just going to say it. Tractors do not belong on the road, okay? They belong in the fields, all right? They've got these big wheels that are made for fields, and they go like 5 miles an hour normally right next to a field. You ever notice this? Like, they're literally, you have wheels that can go on a field. Why aren't you just doing that? I don't go onto your field and drive a half mile in front of you, half a mile. I get angry when I think about it. Can't even talk. But anyway, traffic gets me that way. I don't like being physically stuck, okay? I also think I've developed a little bit of claustrophobia as I've gotten older. I just don't like being stuck in small places. I think it's, you know, big guy, small spaces, they just don't mix, right? We don't fix. But besides being physically stuck, right, I think we could all get on the same page being emotionally stuck, right? We've all experienced that or spiritually stuck. And I think if we're honest, being stuck can be scary, right? We don't like not knowing what's up ahead. I don't like not knowing where I'm going. And especially if you're trying to get out and you can't get out from what you're stuck in. And recently I've had a lot of conversations with people who feel this way, and they feel this way in our current world or our current climate. And maybe you've said some of these phrases recently, right? Maybe you've said things like I feel stuck and I don't know what to do. Or I'm paralyzed. Or I don't know what to do for the future. Or for my kids. Or for my job. For my relationship. Being stuck can be frightening, especially going into the unknown, which is actually why I titled today's message Into the Unknown, mostly because I also have a 2-year-old who's obsessed with Frozen, and if it's going to be stuck in my head, it's going to be stuck in your head. But, you know, so many people say these words, like this word, I feel stuck. Maybe you feel stuck in your job right now. Maybe you feel stuck in your career right now, right? You're feeling like you've hit the ceiling of your job and you can't go any further, right? And you can't, and that's frustrating. You feel stuck, or maybe you're totally bored and totally disinterested in what you're doing. You feel like there's no meaning. You feel like there's just no fulfillment, and honestly, you're just going to work for the paycheck. Maybe you feel like a failure because you can't get your business up off the ground, or maybe you lost your job and you just don't know which direction you're going in and you feel stuck, or maybe you've experienced some tough things, some pain, some tragedy, and some things have happened to you, or maybe some things that you've done to other people that have made you feel stuck. Maybe there's things that you've done that you're not proud of, and so as a result, you feel stuck in the past, right? Or stuck in shame, right? Maybe you feel stuck in a relationship, right? This isn't what you dreamed of. Maybe you spend all your free time worrying about this relationship, or maybe you're single and you feel stuck. Maybe you just can't figure out why dates don't stick, or relationships fall flat, or why no one is asking me out, or as parents, right? As parents, we can feel stuck. Like, why doesn't my kid respond the way I want them to? Or why isn't my kid doing blank when their kids are doing it? I mean, we're all stuck. We're all stuck in the house. We were all stuck in the house during COVID. I mean, some of us still feel like we're in 2020, even though the year has changed. It still feels like a continuation of 2020. And listen, I think if we're honest, no one likes to feel stuck. No one likes to be on a detour or a delay in a journey. And whenever we encounter a road that's under construction or something that halts our journey, we tend to want to just throw our hands up and say, why, God, why now? Why did this happen to me? Many of you know, I'm stuck in the middle of a health journey right now. I was diagnosed with cancer in March, and we've been undergoing treatment ever since. And thankfully, I'm headed in the right direction, but there's still tests and treatments to be done until I'm working towards being cancer-free. But honestly, I'm in the middle of this, like, feeling stuck as well. And I think if we're honest, feeling stuck also breeds emotions, right? If you're stuck, you feel fear. You feel anxiety. You feel depressed. And all of this kind of circles around maybe the biggest of them all, which is that feeling of uncertainty. Uncertainty is kind of where all of this lives. Fear, anxiety, depression, it can all come from uncertainty. And all of this uncertainty, it what makes being stuck such a dark place. And plus, we don't ever get to choose when and where we get stuck. Getting stuck just kind of chooses us. And yes, there are things that we can do that cause us to get stuck, but other times it's like we're not looking for it, we're not asking for it, but it just shows up. And when it does, we find ourselves desperately wanting to get unstuck, to get out of it. But there is some good news. There is some good news, though, because when you find yourself stuck, whether it's now or later, there is hope. And the reason I know there is hope is because when you look at Scripture, you find that it's full of people just like you and just like me who have found themselves stuck. And by encountering these stories, it gives us insight and hope and solutions on how we can live when we find ourselves stuck. So there's a story that I think I want to take you to today that I think just kind of perfectly illustrates what it means to be stuck. And when we look at the Jewish scriptures, most commonly referred to as the Old Testament, we see, amongst other stories, the story of the Israelites. And it's found in the book of Exodus. We encounter much of the nation of Israel who spend much of their lives physically, emotionally, and spiritually stuck. And I think to understand the story of the nation of Israel and them being stuck, you have to kind of start with Abraham. Abraham's family becomes the nation of Israel, and these are known as God's chosen people. And unfortunately, they end up being stuck, spending 400 years enslaved in Egypt. And after they're freed, they spend 40 more years literally stuck in the desert on their way to God's promised land. And the entire story kind of provides an incredible lesson of what it means to feel stuck. And during this particular time, the Israelites were enslaved in Egypt, there was a guy named Moses who was born. And as a baby, he was actually hidden in the river by his mother because Pharaoh, who was ruling Egypt at the time, Pharaoh was looking at this large amount of Israelites' people, and he was worried that they would have an uprising against him. And so he made this decree that all firstborn baby boys would actually be killed. And so his mother, Moses' mother, not wanting her son to be killed, actually put him in the river to hopefully be rescued. And he was found by one of Pharaoh's daughters and was raised in Pharaoh's house as royalty. So about 40 years goes by, right, and Moses realizes, hey, wait a minute, these people, these Israelite people, they're actually my people. He's not Egyptian by birth, but he sees what's happened to his people, and he sees the oppression that's happening, and he actually sees an Egyptian beating up one of the Israelites, and he intervenes and actually ends up killing this Egyptian. When word gets out, obviously Pharaoh's not happy, and so Moses flees for about 40 years into the desert in this town called Midian. So there's a lot of 40 years happening in the lives of Moses and the Israelites, and this time, God speaks to Moses while he's out in the desert, and he tells Moses that he wants him to free his people, the Israelites, from slavery. And after resisting initially, there's some fun back and forth. Moses decides to go back to Egypt and faces down Pharaoh. Now, God brings plagues on Egypt and kind of forces Pharaoh's hands. Eventually, Pharaoh allows the Israelites to leave, but later changes his mind and decides to pursue them. And that's where we pick up the story here in Exodus 14. So it says, as a Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. So let's just paint this picture a little bit more here, right? God has delivered them out of slavery. God has brought them to the edge of the Red Sea there. Now they see, obviously, an insurmountable odds ahead of them, right? They are stuck physically. They see that there is a Red Sea in front of them. They see that there is Egyptians behind them. But even in the moment, they're like, Moses, what? Did you have a plan? Did you just want to bring us out of Egypt to get us killed? Did you want us to just bring us out of Egypt to die here? And Moses answered them. Verse 13, it says, do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today will never see again. And we'll talk about this a little bit more today, but some of you just need to hear God say this, do not be afraid. And you're going to realize that God's promises to the nation of Israel are still relevant to his promises today for you as God's people. And so he continues in verse 14, and he says, in one of my favorite verses, the Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Which is something that's completely counterintuitive to when we're stuck. We want to try to do as much as humanly possible when we're stuck. The fact that God is telling his people, don't be afraid. The Lord will fight for you. You only need to be still. And yet, they listened. And God did. He fought for them. The moment, think about it, the moment they're freed from slavery, they get to the end of the Red Sea, there's no way to go around it, there's no way to go, they can't swim it, they don't have any boats, the Egyptians are coming, right, they're coming at them with chariots and weapons, all to capture them and bring them back to Egypt. They're literally stuck. When God makes a way, he parts the Red Sea through Moses, they are able to cross safely through the river, and then when the Egyptians go in to try to pursue them, the water swallows them up, comes crashing down on Pharaoh's army. It's an amazing story. They were physically stuck, they were emotionally stuck, they were spiritually stuck, and yet God made a way. They must have thought that at that point, all right, we're good. We're good. Whew. We got out of slavery. We got out of that Red Sea situation. We should be smooth sailing to the promised land, to the land of milk and honey, to this land that God had told us about, promised us. Well, things were going great for a few days. For a few days, and then it didn't take long for them to get stuck again. Look at what happened in chapter 16, Exodus 16, verse 2 and 4. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. the Israelites said to them, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted, but you have brought us out into the desert to starve this entire assembly to death. Well, never mind that we were enslaved. Never mind that we were treated poorly. We had pots of meat. And everything is better with pots of meat. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing that when we're stuck, we can find all sorts of means to justify our behavior, to justify what we do? I mean, the things we've done that cause us to be stuck, we justify it. We justify it over and over and over in our heads. To justify the situation, we're just as well, you know, well, this is the way it is. This is where God wants me to do. You just sit in my own pile of stuckness. But that's not true at all. That's not true at all. And God didn't just leave them there. And listen, there's going to be circumstances. Yes, I understand that. There's going to be circumstances in our life that are going to cause us consequences for things that we've actually done. That is true in any situation, right? If I put my hand on a hot stove, I should expect to be burned, right? But we're not meant to stay there. Burns heal with the proper care, right? So it doesn't do any good looking back at the entire time you've burned your hand just to continue living in the pain. Right? And God didn't just leave them there and say, deal with it. Look at what he did. Verse 4, he says, then the Lord said to Moses, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and to gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. And guess what? Guess what? He did. And they gathered food for each day. They depended on God. And God delivered them. They trusted in God, and God saved them. He provided exactly what they needed. Listen, though it's hard to remember amidst being stuck, I understand that. You have to remember, and they had to remember, that God is there. Let's think about this up to the time. Let's think about this up to this exact moment. He's rescued them out of slavery in Egypt, doing some incredible signs to let Pharaoh know that these are my people. And then he rescues them in what seemingly an impossible way by parting the Red Sea and bringing them through to safety. And now he's literally providing food from heaven for them to be able to have enough to eat. You would think at this point the Israelites would be like, all right, maybe God does have our back. But no, when we're stuck, we're much like the Israelites. We'd be like, okay, well, what about this? Verse 17, we're back at it. But the people were thirsty. Well, we have all this bread, but we got nothing to drink. We're thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses, and they said, "Where did you bring us out of Egypt to make us and our children and livestock die of thirst?" They sound like children. I'm dying of thirst, right? And then so it continues. Why did you bring us there? Why did you bring us into this mess of what's happening? And the Lord answered Moses, right? The Lord answered Moses, go out in front of the people, take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand the staff with which you struck the Nile, and go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock, and water will come out of it for the people to drink. And guess what? Moses did, and God did. Every single time God's people needed him, he showed up. They depended, and God delivered them. They stuck it out with God, and God unstuck them. Deliverance when we're stuck comes through dependence on God, which makes me wonder this. And this is the question that we're going to be wrestling through this entire series. What is God trying to teach us when we're stuck? What is God trying to teach you? What is God trying to teach me when we're stuck? If you think back to the nation of Israel and they're being stuck, God was trying to teach them about dependence, about trust. Because I'll tell you this, when we find ourselves stuck in life, it can feel like, you know, we've been abandoned. Like we're wandering in circles trying to get unstuck. But we can actually find that there is great purpose in being stuck. We spend so much time We spend so much time trying to get unstuck that God is actually trying to get us to get something when we're stuck. We get so focused on getting unstuck, and the whole time God is working on us, trying to get us to learn something about while we are stuck. And that something, in this particular case, is dependence. It's trust. And listen, I understand, trust is one of the hardest lessons to learn. Post-surgery, coming out of surgery, coming out of this diagnosis from March 23rd on, God has been focusing on nothing but trust and dependence with me. He has been showing me in ways that this is what he's calling me to do. Hey, I know you're scared. I know you're focused on this one thing. I know you're focused on this. I know you're focused on that. Because your world, you get a diagnosis. Your world, you have a tough relationship. You have a tough experience at work. You know, you're about to lose your job. Your finances are piling up. You can get so focused. You can get so myopic on the situation that somebody telling you, hey, listen, you got to focus on what God is, that you are not alone in this, sometimes doesn't feel like it's going to help. And I understand that. I understand that trust is a hard lesson to learn, but the entire time God was trying to reveal to me that the key to this was going to be dependence and trust in him. Through my wife, through my family, through my friends, through a lot of you as part of this church family who would reach out to me, send me encouraging verses, trying to let me to know, hey, you are not alone in this. And I understand that. It's only when sometimes trust is the hardest thing to learn, but I truly, truly believe it can only be learned sometimes when we are stuck. Because you see, when things are going good in our life, when things are going all hunky-dory, the temptation is, when things are good, to not depend on God. To depend on ourselves, to depend on our wealth, to depend on our job, to depend on our relationships, to depend on the things that I've created. But man, how quickly those things can crumble. How quickly those things can go away. But what God is trying to teach them in this moment, and what God is trying to teach us in that moment, is that God never goes away. Which is why he can say to us in Deuteronomy 31:6, is why he can say to us, be strong and courageous, do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. This is why he wants us to trust him. Because when we trust in him, he takes us from being stuck to being unstuck. In fact, when we're stuck, it only highlights our need for trust and dependence. We always need God, but we don't always know that we do. And in fact, it makes me wonder in this narrative of the nation of Israel that the promised land, right, this land that they were focused on, this land that they were heading to, the land of milk and honey, what if the promised land, what if it was less of a place and more of a promise? What if it was more about a person? What if Israel could have been experiencing the promised land the entire time through trusting him? Because let's think about this for a moment. If you look at how long this journey was supposed to take them, if you look at the map, you see from where they were released in Egypt to where the promised land is, it should have taken 11 days. It took 40 years. It's like back when I was delivering pizza. I was terrible at it. Some of you still haven't gotten your pizzas, and I apologize. Right? But man, right? If you got to think about this, that if they could have trusted, they could have depended on God, if it was about God teaching them trust and teaching them dependence, what if they had just started early on, they could have experienced him, and they could have experienced the promised land all along. If you find yourself stuck in something right now, what if you tried asking this question? What is God trying to teach me while I'm stuck? Like I said, I think it's the question. I think it's the question we need to wrestle with this entire series, because you see, you don't have to be rescued by being unstuck in order to be rescued when you're stuck. You can experience peace, hope, freedom. You don't have to live in despair when you reframe your heart and soul to depend on God. What is God trying to teach you while you're stuck? Maybe, just maybe, it's dependence on Him. The people of Israel were stuck, and yet God delivered them. And no, the people of Israel were not perfect. They were, in fact, they never were, and it was never about that. They failed God over and over and over again, and yet God delivered them, and yet God continued to use them. And some of you, because of the things that you've done or the things that you're doing, and just like there was hope for Israel, there is hope for you too. In fact, you may have never seen this before. This kind of blew my mind when I was getting ready to prepare for this series. There's a prophet. His name is Hosea. He wrote a book in scriptures called the Book of Hosea. He was writing this around 780 to 740 BC. And just to let you know, the Exodus happened around 1440 BC. So we're talking about a difference of about 700 years from when the Exodus happened to when Hosea, was a prophet. And in Hosea 11:1, right, he's a prophet speaking of God. He says, "When Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son." Now, this is incredible. This is absolutely amazing to me, because I think it's so powerful that first and foremost, God calls Israel his child. All right, and maybe I understand this a little bit more being a parent, but listen, I love my child. I do. And does she do everything right? No. No, absolutely not. There are things I will blatantly say, "Don't do," and she's like, "Watch me do it. Watch me do it." But man, I love her. "And out of Egypt, I called my son." So here you see this parallel that he's calling from his children, his people, Israel, right? God is calling his child, Israel, whom he loved, "Out of Egypt, I called my son." He's calling them out of bondage. He's calling out of slavery. He's calling him out of something that they were stuck in, right? When we're stuck in something and we feel that God has forsaken us or that he doesn't care, but with Israel, he shows that he loves them, he loves his people, he fights for his people. But Hosea, they also saw something that they couldn't see themselves, and that was hope. God would never forsake his people forever. He would provide a new Israel for those who would serve the Lord faithfully. Well, what does that mean? Well, this hope was finally fulfilled in Jesus Christ. Look at what it says in Matthew. Now, this is amazing. In Matthew, in the birth narrative, just after we see the birth narrative of Jesus, right? We see that the Lord comes to tell Joseph and Mary, that's Jesus' parents, right, to tell them to flee and leave Egypt because Herod, the ruler at the time, was killing babies. Sound familiar? So, look at this. Matthew 2, 14 through 15. "So he got up," he's talking about Joseph, "took the child," that's Jesus, "and his mother," that's Mary, "during the night and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, 'Out of Egypt I called my son.'" This is 5 BC, 750 years after the prophet Hosea wrote the exact same thing. Let's look at those two verses together. "And out of Egypt I called my son." There's Hosea 11:1. "And out of Egypt I called my son." There's Matthew 2:15. That hope for a new Israel, a true Israel that would be embody all that God called Israel to be, was fulfilled in Jesus Christ. And the good news of the gospel is that we can be the true Israel of God as well. When we walk into this relationship with Jesus, we share in the privileges and relationships that he enjoys as God's true sons. We're not sons and daughters of God's by nature, but through adoption. And as a result, we inherit those promises. We inherit the promises of God. We inherit the promises of God's people. And therefore, you are his promise. Those promises are for you as well, which is why we can go back to what he says in Exodus 14, and it says, do not be afraid. In those moments of stuckness, do not be afraid. He can say that to you because you've walked into this relationship with Jesus. He can say, stand firm, and you will see deliverance. You will be unstuck. The Lord will bring you today. The Lord will fight for you. You need to only be still. If you're stuck, maybe praying, Jesus, I'm stuck and I need you. I want to follow you and I want to turn away from the things that trap me, that enslave me, that get me stuck. I'm going to decide today that I'm going to choose to follow you. Remember, the unstuck life is not a perfect life. It is a perfecting life. Getting unstuck means I'm moving forward in my life because I'm willing to give God complete control. And no matter where you feel stuck, he's calling you in this moment to trust him. You don't have to live in despair. You don't have to live in these desolate conditions. When you reframe your heart and reframe your soul towards God and begin to depend on him. So, the question we're asking ourselves, what is God trying to teach you while you're stuck? Maybe, just maybe, it's dependence and trust in him. If you haven't walked into this relationship with Jesus yet, maybe he's calling you to that. If you have walked into this relationship, maybe you start to see yourself depending on yourself more and more. God is calling you back into that. If you're amidst a moment that is stuck right now, you're feeling stuck in a situation and you can't seem to move forward and you can't seem to move back and you're trying all that you can to try to get out of it, and we are not allowing God to take that moment to realize that he's going to fight for us and he will deliver us and be still. This is where it starts, my friend. This is the foundation for it. And as we continue this series, we'll see how we can unpack that even more. But the question we need to ask ourselves is, what is God trying to teach us when we are stuck? Will you pray with me? Father, this is going to be the foundation that is laid for the rest of this series. This right here is going to be, what are you trying to teach us in these situations that we're stuck in? Help us to not look at these situations and just focus on what's happening, but to take a step back and say, okay, God, what is it that you're trying to teach me? What in this situation am I making this 40 years rather than 11 days? I know it's not easy. I know for a fact it's not easy. Calling someone to trust amidst a difficult, stuck situation is not always the easiest thing, but what we've seen time and time again is you have shown up. And my prayer today is, maybe for those who are watching online, or maybe for those that are here who haven't placed their faith and trust in you yet, that maybe they just cross the threshold just a bit. And for the first time, trust that not only are you are who you say you are, but that you are fighting for them. And that you've gone before them. And that you're ready to deliver them. And for those of us who've been walking on this relationship with you and sometimes tend to fall into our own trap of trusting in ourselves or trusting in our work or trusting in our wealth or trusting in things, that we'll start to shift that focus, to shift that trust and place it in you. What are you trying to teach us, God? Help that question to be written in our hearts. And we're excited to see how to engage with you. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.